While I have you here, this is one of my fixations.
By the way, tell everybody I didn't read it.
Your creative birth is in the 60 to late 63 period. Playing, recording, first writing, going to Germany. It coincides with John F. Kennedy's presidency.
Mm.
And I'm just bringing up the Kennedy situation again. From 1952 to 1960, while Dwight Eisenhower was president and Richard Nixon was vice president, we got Allen Ginsberg, Little Richard, Chuck Berry. Mm-hmm. A lot of great rock and roll happened 52 to 60. If that was a restrictive time period of conventionality, maybe.
Right, right.
Pre-birth control pill, a lot of stuff. Tremendous blues and jazz came mm-hmm. out of that world. You come out of this 61 to 64 world. That's not dismissing the stuff that's happened since, but the germs and the seeds of many of these projects are 60 to 64.
Well, that's when I started doing original ones,
okay,
based on what I had learned from those earlier ones.
But let me ask you, it's been a different America after November 22nd, 1963.
Yeah, I was in Germany then.
Okay, so what is it about the fertile creative soil of 60 to late 63? I know we only had three television stations. There was no cable. Mm-hmm. We hadn't really had FM rock radio yet.
It was just starting.
Right. But that world shape-shifted a lot of your stuff.
When Kennedy was in, it was like the impossible dream had happened. You know,
but did it mean more to you being from Massachusetts, growing up in Massachusetts, having some fleeting encounters with the Kennedy clan?
I was barely in Germany probably 2-3 weeks or something.
Yes.
When he was assassinated. And the first thing that happened was, because I was an American, every German I saw came up and embraced me and said how horrible it was and how sorry they were and how they would miss him and they understood my angst and everything. Wow. Who knew? I mean, he told everybody he was a hot dog. I mean, which is, I'm making the joke,
yes,
because
yes,
he said,
yes.
I am a Berliner, which is a hot dog, Anyway, but he was greatly loved worldwide. And it looked like when we said we're going to go to the moon and all this other stuff, and we were, and we did, and all that happened. So it seemed like anything was possible. And if I had then released Morning Stone or Changeling when I could have, I don't know that we would be facing the catastrophes of our environment today that we are. I don't know that. But what I was trying to explain about me is, my job is, I must say it. It may not work. I must release this as a rhyme. It's okay if they make an action movie. It can be a cartoon. I don't care what afterward. But the rhyme had to be maintained, had to be saved. And now, next will be Lohengrin, and I must tell that story. After which, I can either tell another story or I can croak. And it won't matter, but I must finish my work. That's how driven I am about those things that started as far back as 1961 for me.
You don't feel a sense you've been gypped?
Well, I tell you, I didn't go to the schools out here. I didn't go to USC. I didn't go to UCLA. I went to Cal Poly Pomona. Okay, so that's not exactly where Hollywood comes from, right?
Besides having a very stable relationship with a very supportive wife for over half a century, were there any key books or people or spiritual courses that fortified you to continue?
Yes, and you've named several of them. The White Goddess by Robert Graves was very influential. The Golden Bough by Fraser way back when.
Yeah.
And it was an updated version, but nevertheless. And, of course, Joseph Campbell, Hero with a Thousand Faces. And the Manly P. Hall stuff was the best research I could run into.
What did he or that place provide?
He had republished a bunch of very old books and documents taken from the original, published by him, one of which was The Celtic Druids, for example. Now, The Celtic Druids was a book about 2 inches thick.
Yes.
And the illustrations in that book were drawn. It's before cameras. It was from like 18-something. And the key to that was that these things that were being shown were all across Europe. It wasn't just Stonehenge in Britain. It was all across Europe. These things were there until the two wars. And it was during those two wars that they were destroyed. And in between, different groups used those wonderful monuments or those very strange monuments for quarry stone for new things, okay? So here I was exposed to a vast culture that embraced these stone monuments. And so I began to, what is this all about? How does it work? Why were they done? When you realize that millions of people venerated these places or whatever they did in them.
I got it.
Then you say, how does that relate to today? I said, well, somebody said to me, Morningstone won't help a bushman. I said, he doesn't need it. He lives in the bush. He either lives according to nature or he dies by it. I need to talk to civilization because civilization is what's killing us. Not because it's necessarily bad, but because it's incredibly ignorant. It's incredibly avaricious. Until we realize our place in nature, we can't control nature. The tsunami comes, the plant melts, and now the nuclear waste is in the ocean.
Yes.
We have no control over nature.
Last year, you won the Lux Life Magazine 2018 Global Entertainment Award for Best Audio Storyteller. Well, tell me about this, and how does it connect to all the work you've done? Because I'm now watching things you did in the 90s receive this acclaim in 2018 and 2019.
The DVD is new. How did it come to their attention? Well, I advertised its release in Shindig, for example.
Right.
And this company is in England. Furthermore, when they read about it, it took place at Blenheim Palace, which is down the road from them, too. They're in Shropshire.
Yes.
So the point, wait a minute, who is this guy who did this incredible thing for the Queen's charity, Save the Children, at Blenheim Palace, where Winston Churchill was born? And it's the home then of the 11th Duke of Marlborough, now the home of the 12th Duke of Marlborough, who was my guest at the table. And I was waiting for Errol Flynn to come in and throw the deer down in front of me.
Yes.
I mean, it was fabulous. And my wife was on my right. Lynn Redgrave was on my left. You know, so the deal is that that production, if they got interested in looking at it, and then they saw that it also had the audio version, because it did.
There'd been a 15th anniversary audio theater edition.
And the 20th anniversary of the video, which is a platinum anniversary. It's not a platinum-selling video, but it's the 20th anniversary is platinum. If it was 25th, it would have been a silver anniversary. I assume, since they're talking about storytelling, when they first notified me that I had to enter their contest, so I said, yeah, okay, if it doesn't cost anything, fine. And then it came back to me that I'd won.
Grumpus, if I'm correct, sort of stems from some childhood pet you had.
The cat that we're talking about is probably a liger, which
right.
is a really huge thing.
Jurassic Park kind of shit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And there are ligers. There are definitely ligers around.
I'm listening.
But the thing I took from my pet cat was the cat was gray. But if you rubbed his fur the other way, it was stripes underneath. I asked at a showbiz expo way back when, a furrier who made phony fur for all these animals and things for the movies, I said, how can I get something made that can go from, you know, tawny gold to the stripes? And he knew. He said, well, cats, he says, have two coats.
Okay, but listen.
This is crazy.
I know, but isn't this a world before CGI?
Yes, yes. And so I'm saying to him, I said, so how do we do that? He said, well, cats have two coats. There's an undercoat, which is insulating and very tightly knit and everything. He says, and that would be stripes. The overcoat that is long-haired and it kind of lies down over the other coat could be tawny gold. He said, but when the cat is angry, excited, or whatever, the outer coat stands on end, which makes the cat look bigger. and reveals the stripes underneath. So what I described to him was based on the real physiology of cats. That made me feel pretty good, too.
This decade, you're getting a whole lot of great reviews for the digital release.
I was putting up the Grumpus website, bringing it up to date, and saying that we'd won that award, even though the award is not for Travis Pike, the storyteller, but for my company, Otherworld Cottage Industries, which gave me an opportunity to talk about it, and that was a thrill. I got in touch with some of the old reviewers, the ones who in the, 20 years ago had said wonderful things about it, because they're talking about the VHS, they're talking about the dual cassettes. It's no longer available in those forms, but it is available in these forms. And I contacted the Midwest book review people.
Yes.
And the guy said, not a problem, go ahead and do it. He said, but he would love to see the new versions. Oh, no problem. So I sent them to him. He sent back two new reviews, and he said it's going to be in these 5 or 6 different publications. So I took down the old ones from 20 years ago, and I put up his new ones. And those are the ones that you just saw, and he reviewed it all over again. And he again gave it rave reviews.
You have been listening to the Otherworld Cottage Industries, Harvey Kubernick, Travis Edward Pike Interview, Part 5. Listeners and bloggers are encouraged to link to or download and share this interview with their friends and visitors with the understanding that this recording remains the property of Otherworld Cottage Industries and its content, including this permission notice, may not be edited, transcribed, or altered in any way. Your cooperation allows us to share this internet content free. Thank you.